Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White here, as always, with a man who is really the culprit behind Deflategate, Ryan Gutowski. How are you, Ryan?
Doing good. It was actually accidental. Deflategate was caused because all I was trying to do was fill those sweet, sweet footballs up with marshmallow cream. That was my whole goal.
You know what? I can't think of any reason why you'd want to do that other than hoping that a football kicker goes up at kickoff, hits it, and it just explodes into marshmallow cream while he's sitting there on the football field.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I can think of.
That would be delicious. It would be good. So, yeah. a pig skin filled with marshmallow cream. So, that's not creepy at all. Yeah. So, hey, Rick, how's your week going?
Not too bad. Sarah and I went up to the mountains on a little church retreat this past weekend, so that was nice and relaxing. But I am home now, been writing some lesson plans all day, and yeah, getting ready for the start of the week. How about you?
That's good. Just hanging out, trying to get our van running. So apparently we had some car issues this week, which has been fun, and also cut into our funds. So. Oh.
I hate it when it cut into our fun and funds.
See what I did there?
Usually those are simultaneous.
But the good part is that I've been playing some games.
Well, why don't you tell us about them, Ryan?
Yeah. Rick, do you remember playing Gizmos from CMON over at the
at Origins?
Origins conference, yeah. Remember playing that game with us?
I do remember playing that game with you.
Yeah, so we ended up playing yourself, me, and Aaron. Had a great teacher teaching us Gizmos. Shout out to Sarah. And she taught us this game that was... It only reminds me of Potion Explosion because it's picking up marbles and putting them in different things. Allocating them. But really,
right, it's got marbles.
But really, it's an engine building game where you're trying to build these combinations where you're going to trigger these different effects happening and you're going to get all these bonus points. It's a really good engine building game. And I think it's good for kids to learn how to kind of build engines in board games. The artwork's minimal, but it's got this really cool cardboard dispenser that dispenses. It's almost like a, what do you call it? Like those claw machines. And it's got all these marbles showing in it and you throw the marbles in there and they roll out just in a single straight line. And so we got a chance to play the final version of Gizmos that was published recently. I think they did a great job with all the components. Really fun game. I actually liked it a lot more the second time playing than I did when we played it at Origins. I think I was the only one at the table that was kind of a detractor of this game. I did not care for it at all. And then the second time playing it, I wanted to see what the finished product looked like. I wanted to try it with a different group of people, not in a convention atmosphere. I really liked it. I liked it a lot more. And then Aaron actually really enjoyed it. And then Josiah played with us, and we played with Bob at a local gaming meetup. And man, he enjoyed it. He was like, this is a really fun game. So Gizmos is really good. Bob's going to be actually writing a review for us on the site here at some point.
Are there things that Bob does not enjoy? He seems like a very happy person, that Bob.
I think Bob enjoys a lot of stuff. I would probably say that he wouldn't like getting hit in the kneecap.
Oh, that is
understandable. I feel if there was anything that he would dislike... being hit in the kneecap with a hard object, I feel like he would greatly disagree with.
Yeah. No, so. I wish we could all be a little more like Bob is really what I'm saying. I played that, like I said, like you said, at Origins. I would kind of say I was in the same boat as you. We were actually playing with a young man who was like 12 years old that kicked my butt. I think actually what happened was me and Aaron played separate from you one time.
I think
had this kid that beat the tar out of us. And I think that might have just been frustrating that I wasn't able to build the engine as quickly. It felt like it ended really fast, but it could have been that he just had a really efficient setup. I don't know. I think I'd like to also give it a try again because it's got some, like you said, some good engine building for beginners, I think.
Yeah.
And it just feels a little more natural. So versus like, you know, a Splendor or like a Century Spice Road, it's harder to see the engine as you're building it. But with that game, like, it's laid out in front of you. So it you is. Can kind of follow everything that you're doing.
Yeah,
so,
you know that when you're picking up a ball from the dispenser, you know, picking up a ball gives you this perk, this perk, this perk. You know, one thing that I tried yesterday was that every time I created a blue item, every time I built a blue item, that gave me so many perks that I was gaining all these points every time I did something with a blue item. I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, so Gizmos, look for that on. That's from Cool Mini or Not, and you can check out a review eventually on OneBoardFamily.com. So,
sweet.
So, Rick, what you been playing, man?
Well, we started off last weekend. We were at my in-laws for my brother-in-law's birthday. That's where we, if people haven't caught on, I do a lot of my gaming. And we got him Mysterium for his birthday, a game that he specifically requested. Mysterium is a game that was pretty popular a while back. And I had purchased the game, but I ended up trading it away because it wasn't my favorite. But he had expressed kind of disappointment that that had been the case. And a couple other people had said they wish I had still had a copy. So we got him a copy of the game and we broke it out. And it's a game in which you are, I guess, ghost whisperers or something like that. And you are going into this house and one player is serving as the ghost, giving out clues, trying to get you to figure out different murders that have happened. You're trying to figure out the culprit, the location, and the weapon, kind of like a Clue a little bit, but that's the only way it's really related to Clue. Because it has a bunch of cards that are used to give the clues, because a ghost can't just straight up tell you, like, you know, that guy did it. They speak to you in visions, and so they're very, that comes in the form of these cards that are very artistic and very, very odd, I guess, is a way to describe them. They're not very straightforward. So the ghost, the player that's serving as the ghost, hands out these cards each round to be a hint as to which of those items is related to each other player's particular case that they know because of this big board that they've got set up, separating them from the rest of the players. And the players have to kind of talk back and forth to figure out, you know, what is it that the ghost is trying to tell them. And then you keep going through and using the clues, figuring out who you are. The ghost tells you yes or no each round. You also make wagers on if you think the other players are right or wrong. And then at the end of the game, if you've all managed to figure out your cases, there is one final case that the ghost picks and puts out a final set of cards, and you all vote on which case of the ones that are available that all the players have solved you think the ghost is trying to point you to. And if you manage to pick that one, you all win. It's a pretty, it's a good game for a big group of people. Like you can play up to seven and it scales really well. But one thing I think that can be frustrating about the game is how difficult it can be to get across what you're trying to say because the cards are so nondescript. Mm-hmm. And you only get, you know, seven at a time, it can be very difficult to pass on what you're trying to say. And of course, you don't want it to be super easy, but it can lead to a lot of the other players having to wait around for the ghost to put out the cards. And, you know, sometimes it works really well for some players and then sometimes it doesn't. So there gets to be frustration towards the player as the ghost. We had a really good time the first round, and we played another round immediately after. And I think like it had worn out its welcome at that point because we were all like, okay, let's get this over with.
Gotcha.
It's a fun game. I still don't know that playing it convinced me that I want to buy it again. But it might be one that I review just to let people know more about it because I know that there are a lot of people that really like it a lot. And so I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah. That's a divisive game, I think, that I've heard people that love Mysterium. And then I've heard people who are like, ah, oh, Mysterium's trash. I don't understand why people play that. So it's one of those games that you're going to have strong feelings either way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, if you're wanting something that plays kind of, I don't know, I think probably in my mind too, like I compare it to Deception because it's kind of got a similar clue-giving mechanic and kind of you're trying to solve a murder. But that one has you, well, and Mysterium has you working together to some extent. I just feel like that game does it better. Like mm-hmm. if you're going to want a game in that kind of line of games, I think Deception is the way to go.
Yeah.
So that would be what I would recommend to people. The other game we played was one we got from USAopoly, and that is Super Mario Brothers Power Up Card Game. This was the underwater edition.
Really?
I don't know how it's different. So okay. Maybe I need to do some research, but it's an interesting game. Basically,
were the cards bluer?
Yes. Well, it was okay. All like the underwater levels of yeah. Mario laid out, cool. and the little markers that were your lives were like swimming Mario.
Would you say that there were more fish than normal Mario?
You know what? There might have been. It would make a lot different. Of sense.
That, yep. I'm being a big jerk now.
Now featuring more fish.
25% more fish than the original yes. game.
We don't even know why there were fish in the first one.
Exactly. So
in this game, basically each round you're dealt a card, and it has a picture from Mario on it, and it has a different little coin representation, and it does like the coins times a number, kind of like it does at the top right corner of okay. a Mario game. So basically you're dealt a card and you're trying to have not the lowest card.
Yeah.
And so on your turn, you can either force a trade with the person to your left or stay. And everybody does that. And then you reveal your cards, and then you can play these power-up cards that can impact like your level. If say you're behind, you can play a fire flower and it adds 2 to your level and stuff like that. And then whoever is the person that's losing loses a life, and then you do it again.
Okay.
That's it. That is the game. It is, I would say it's not great. we played it, and from the get-go was very worried about how it would go. We seemed to have a good time, but I think everybody was glad it was over. We played with 3 lives each instead of 4. Right from the get-go, and I think everybody was pretty happy about that. It's good that we're going to be talking about licensed games today,
yeah.
because I think this can be one that we talk about as how not to use your license.
Yeah.
But it's just, to me, it's similar to Mysterium. If I'm going to be playing a game like this, where you're all sitting around the table and people are slowly being eliminated, I'm going to play Liar's Dice, because... Yeah. It's way better. There's way more player interaction. And it just feels like you have a little more control. I don't know this. I don't know. There was more stuff involved in this that you could have impacted, but I just never really got into it. And
do you feel like this was almost made for kids? Maybe this game, or is it more complex than a kid would normally need? I don't know. Where does this fit on the spectrum, or is it just not a good game?
But the thing is, like, if it's made for kids, you know, that license isn't going to hit very well, because kids don't know, like, old Mario well. I mean, I think it's intended to be like a, ooh, cool, Super Mario, but as soon as you open the box and you start playing, you realize, like, this is not Mario.
Yeah.
And so that really leads to a lot of disappointment. I think, you know... fun can be had with this game.
Yeah.
I think we found some entertainment. I think my big thing is that you can have more fun with something that costs equal or less than that. And so why play this when you could be playing the other thing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. I mean, in the crowded market that is board gaming right now and the industry, the way that it's growing, I don't know that we have room for really poor licensed games. And so, and that brings us to actually our topic of the show. So we're going to take a quick break and we will be back in just a second. And we are back. So, Rick, the question of the show is, what makes a good licensed game? We're going to be talking about some of the ways that we've played licensed, some of the licensed games that we've played that are good and some that are bad. We're not hating on any games, but we are just kind of sharing our opinions of like how this license could have been used better or maybe where the publisher didn't try very hard. So Rick, what's some advice that you would give from just the game player perspective?
From the game player's perspective, as far as what am I looking for? What do I want from these companies?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you say we're not hating on games. I plan to do some serious hate throwing.
Ooh,
personally.
Nice.
I know, man. But no, I think, you know, licenses are a thing that are kind of dangerous. I, before board game licenses really became a thing, kind of experienced them with video games. You know, you always played those licensed games and they were always, not always, but often kind of trash.
Often
like
terrible.
If you think like the worst game ever is like Superman 64.
Yes.
And, you know, some of those, until like Batman Arkham Asylum came around, it was a lot of myths when it came to licensed games. And, of course, you know, board games, if you go back to 60s, 70s, 80s, a lot of the board games were licensed games.
Yep.
And like they would throw licenses on anything. And it was almost always just like, you know, roll dice, move around, draw a card, and there's something from the game that, from the license that shows up. There wasn't all that much, like, really to it. We're not going to be talking about those, really, but, you know, I think probably if you go talk to somebody that was around during that time, they probably got some old licensed games. I know my dad had a copy of the Mad Magazine game.
Yep, I remember that one.
That we had, and I remember playing it because I liked the idea of Mad Magazine more so than I think I've ever actually liked Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
I don't think we had a good time when we played that game.
Well, I think instead of just reskinning games or making a roll and move game, something simplistic, I think the games that really work that are licensed games are ones that connect the mechanics to the theme. You know, something that makes you feel like you're part of that. I think this conversation is coming up because last week on the podcast, we talked about Hail Hydra. Hail Hydra is a game that makes you feel like you're part of that universe because it's a hidden role game. So there are secrets being had at the table. And that's the premise of this superhero, like this world that you live in. You know, you're a superhero and two people, three people have pledged allegiance to Hydra. So I think they connected the mechanics and the theme really, really well. Another one that is actually coming out, even though it's a reskin, I think it makes a lot of sense. Rick, did you ever play the game Quartz?
I have not played Quartz, but I've heard a lot about it.
Yeah, so we really like Quartz, and I've talked about it on the show. Josiah got Quartz for Christmas this past year, and it's real backstabbing. It's a lot of fun. You're basically dwarves in a mine, and you're mining gems and trying not to get hurt on the job, and watching your back because everybody's out to get you. Well, Snow White, Disney has taken it and did Snow White, the gemstone mining game, and it's just a reskin of Quartz. That makes a lot of sense because the initial game is dwarves in a mine, and now you've got this Snow White themed game that has all the seven dwarves mining and all this stuff. So that's a game that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, they're connecting something that already looks and feels a certain way, and then they're saying, you know what, we can skin this game and it's going to feel like it. You know, it feels like you're in that universe. Unlike something like the Super Mario Brothers power-up game, which is just some cards with Mario's face on it. You know,
right. I think it's. I mean, there are games that people have tried to make you feel like you're in the experience, and it just didn't go all that well. You know, I think one that has been pretty popular the past few years was the Oregon Trail card game.
Yeah.
You know, I was excited about that thing existing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was right around the time that I was really starting to get more into board gaming, and so I was like, this is going to be like my childhood come to life. And there are parts of it that are definitely recreated there. But, like, you know, we always laugh about how you'd always die fording the river and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that element of the game is there, like that bad stuff is happening to you and it's difficult to make it to the end. But, you know, in the video game, it happened really quickly and you were by yourself playing the game.
Yeah.
But when that stuff, when you've taken the time to get people together at a table to sit and play this Oregon Trail board game, card game, and you die, like, pretty soon into the game, like,
yeah.
But, like, one of or two of the players will die pretty soon, and then the other two are left playing, and you know it's hopeless, but you feel like you kind of need to keep going, and then, like, something randomly bad happens to you, and it just ends. Like, that's not fun.
No.
There is a big difference, I think, between execution on a computer game and execution on a board game. So I think they tried to make something that was unique, and it just didn't go all that well.
Yeah, that's a property that was pretty depressing to see the final version of that game. And then you're like, oh, this is what this is. You know, I think they've kind of made it up by the Oregon Trail, the board game. There's actually an Oregon Trail board game that has shown up. I saw it at Target. I actually saw it at Target recently. And I'm really excited because I think they're bringing something to this property. They're doing this property justice. Oregon Trail in board game form or card game form isn't just going to die with that terrible card game that was a Target. This is, they actually have a chance at a second chance here. So,
yeah. I think that one's supposed to be more like Pioneer Days, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's a lot more like Pioneer Days. I've heard that there's not a ton of overlap, so owning both makes sense. You know, you're not going to say, one's way better than the other.
If you really need that pioneering itch scratched twice, go ahead and get both of them.
I think one of the bad things about licensed games, something that I've seen in years past, is games that are just putting games that are being put out there just because of timing. You know, You look at a product like the Stranger Things Ouija board. Come on, man. You know, and the saddest part is I know developers who have said, I tried to get the Stranger Things license and, you know, Hasbro beat us to it. Like they just have more money. You know, and so the end product that you get as Stranger Things is coming out on Netflix as season two hits, you go to the store and you've got the Stranger Things Ouija board, you know,
right?
Or Monopoly.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing kind of that under makes sense. I mean, it happens a lot in the video game world too.
Yeah.
Like this movie's about to come out, let's make sure we release the video game. So, I mean, it is a way to make a quick buck. But often it's at the expense of quality.
It deteriorates the license, I think, because like I worry about if I know what that's why I'm hesitant sometimes when Marvel puts out something. It's like Marvel has done Marvel Clue and Marvel Monopoly and Marvel whatever just to sell, and then Hail Hydra comes out and I'm like, is this just a reskin of something? But no, it's actually a really good game. So I'm very cautious when those new ones come out, which is sad because you should be able to say, no, I know the product that they're going to put out and I know it's good.
I think a thing that is good in a good licensed game is high quality components where you can tell that they're really paying attention to the property and trying to give you something that is... It brings the universe to life. Hail Hydra was one of those, I think. Like, it looks good.
Yeah.
I think Hail Hydra looks really good. And it's well done. And I think Thanos Rising, I'm not as familiar with that one, but again, in the Marvel universe, you've got some good components there.
Yeah. You've got this big Thanos statue. While the paint job might not be great, you've got this big Thanos statue that, while it's not necessary, it's still like a really cool centerpiece. And mm-hmm. it's a component that kind of brings people to the table that you're like, oh, I saw Infinity War recently, or, oh, I just bought Infinity War on DVD. I'm going to sit down and play this game because that's on the top of my mind. I remember leaving the theater after seeing Infinity War and saying, I know that my local game store has Thanos Rising. I wonder if I should go buy it. You know, because that was at the top of my mind, and I knew it was a good game. So I don't know. It there's something to it about having some really nice components and putting that property in a positive light.
Right. Part of the reason I bought Ninja Turtles Munchkin. Munchkin is not very well liked around my house, but I really wanted it because it has the art by the original comic book artist Kevin yep. Eastman, and it looks really cool. They could have gone a lot of directions, just done their own versions of the Ninja Turtles. You know, there's been plenty of different versions of that they could have gone with. But by giving it this old school feel, I think they were really appealing to the fans and that's trying right. to make sure that they are interested in that. And I think that's kind of one other one that we wanted to talk about, was like making sure that you are doing fan service. You're not. You show that you care about the fans and that you're yeah. not just trying to get their money from them. I think that is important for a licensed game.
Every time we bring Disney code names to the table, there is something that I've never seen before, have no clue about, because I'm not really a Disney fan. I like Disney movies for the most part. I've seen a lot of them. But my daughter, when she sees a specific character that's so obscure, she's like, oh, that's so-and-so, and that's from this movie and this scene and blah, blah, blah. And so her being a huge Disney fan, like, Disney code names really put in some little things that really fans enjoyed. You know, every time we've got this couple that you actually know, this couple, Rebecca and David, they love Disney. And so when they come over, they gravitate toward that game because they know, as fans of Disney, they're going to see something that they like every time.
Right, and then they're going to win, and that's just not fair.
That's actually true. I think every time they're on a team, that team always wins.
Right, and I think, like, if you're talking fan service, I really think that Bob Ross Happy Little Accidents does a really good job with that.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite part of it is the scoring tokens that you use are based off of squirrels. So yeah. For those people that, you know, used to watch Bob Ross, he kept pet squirrels, and he'd always cut to footage of those pet squirrels on episodes and call them, like, little plucky little devils and stuff like that.
That's so
and
funny.
The scoring tokens are pictures of the little squirrels, so you're giving squirrels as scoring tokens. That's I think awesome. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Bob Ross' Art of Chill, they have cards that have his quotes on them, and just little things yeah. like that, that, you know, just make you smile as you're playing the game, I think are really pretty cool.
Yeah. I think we'll end it with one of the things that I don't like when licensed games do this is overkilling a property. I had a friend of mine who bought a board game a couple months ago, and she called me all excited. She was like, oh, guess what? Guess what? I got the new Rick and Morty so-and-so game. And I was like, oh, you got this one? And she was like, hold on, let me read it. No. I was like, oh, well, you got this one? And she was like, no. And mm-hmm. then she named it, and I was like, oh, you got the new Rick and Morty game that's terrible. Cool. You know? And it's sad because with all the, you know, you've got 20 or 30 Rick and Morty games out there, and obviously they're selling because they just continue to populate store shelves. It's like they're reproducing. You leave the store and it's like you come back and there's a new Rick and Morty game. It's like, how did that happen?
Right.
But I think it dilutes the good stuff, because the minute somebody goes out there and says, I'm a fan of Rick and Morty, I'm going to go grab this new game, they have a terrible time with this game, they're not going to trust the actually good Rick and Morty games that are on the store shelves. And there are a couple good ones. you know? So I feel bad when people get duped into purchasing the worst version of a licensed product.
Right.
You know?
Well, and it's also that, you know, not only can you overkill the license, but you can overkill the game. You know, there are some games that have been doing it well. Like, I think Legendary has had a lot of games they're putting out, but I see a lot of positive reviews on almost all that they put out.
Yeah.
But like Flux, there are a bajillion different Flux games. Like, there's one for Monty Python and the Holy Grail. There's one for Firefly. There's one for Marvel. Like, there's too many, you know, and it becomes difficult when you're trying to find a good game. It becomes difficult to figure out which one is it that actually plays well. And even like for us, we know a lot about games, but I couldn't tell you if you're wanting a version of Flux, I couldn't tell you which one to get because there's too many and I don't know how they all play. And so it almost becomes one of those things where I almost avoid it entirely because it's too difficult to make sure that you're going to get one something that you want.
Yeah, that's true. So we are actually going to go into the last segment of the show talking about 5 licensed games that we would recommend. So we will see you on the other side of this break. Rick, we're back. We're going to be talking about 5 licensed games that we would recommend for you to check out. You ended the last segment talking about Legendary, a Marvel deck builder. This is a game that's really good, and I believe this was the first of the Legendary series.
I believe so.
Yeah,
I think it was just called Legendary.
That's yeah, but it's actually I think is it hitting its 10-year anniversary? I think. I saw something the other day that there's a 10-year anniversary box edition or something like that. But anyway, this is a really cool property. It's a deck-building game that features some of your favorite iconic Marvel characters. You feel like you're part of this universe, defeating the bad guys, saving the innocent victims of the town. And so they do a really good job with the license. They do a great job with the artwork. It feels like part of this comic book universe. And it's not just a cheap thrown-together game. And what I love about it is that they give you so much replayability by introducing all these different packs. You've got Fantastic Four, and you've got Spider-Man, you've got Guardians of the Galaxy, so you can buy packs of the Marvel properties you like and play with those characters. So it's really cool.
Yeah, and like we said, there's a lot of other licenses that are using it.
Yep.
Legendary Encounters, there's a alien based version of the game that is actually on Board Game Geek ranked higher than just Legendary itself. There's a Buffy version, there's a Predator version. You can find something that will work for you.
I believe there's an X-Files version coming out this fall, or if it hasn't already come out. So
there's a Big Trouble Little China version because that's what the people demand.
Yeah.
It's a cool, you know, card-based, you can play cooperatively or against each other. And I don't know, it's kind of like how the reason you even get these games, you feel like the superheroes fighting them because they've got their special powers. And so
that's
you're
right.
Like, yeah, this is, I'm Wolverine kind of thing. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. So, Rick, if I were a Harry Potter fan, which I'm not really a Harry Potter fan, never got
that's
into
okay.
it.
It's okay, we'll forgive you.
Don't judge me. If you were a Harry Potter fan, what board game would you have on your shelf?
You should be grabbing Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. A similar kind of style to Legendary. It's a deck builder. What's cool about it, though, is that each character is going to have their own set of cards. So Harry's got his stuff, Ron's got his stuff, Hermione's got her stuff, and then Neville is our nice fourth player, and that means nothing to you because you have no idea what I'm talking
about.
That's
true. So
you've got each character having things from the book series that they have as part of their decks, and then there are a pile of cards as the game goes on that you can buy things and add them to your deck. So like Polyjuice Potion, or you can also buy spells that will have different impact on the game. Basically, what you're doing is you're trying to defeat the bad guys from the movies before they can defeat you. And so you'll spend your turns attacking those bad guys altogether, or you'll be buying new cards. One thing that's really awesome about this one is that there are new cards that come out that are supposed to be for the different years of Harry Potter, like the years that he's in school. So like each book has a few different cards that get added, and so you're supposed to play through them, and the game gets progressively harder, and you get new experience. So it's kind of like a legacy game, but it's built to where replaying it is not going to be as... You're not, like, having any spoilers or anything. Yeah. It's just like, oh, cool, and then I'm totally willing to play this again. So if you're a kind of a Dominion fan, but you want to work together, this works. I guess you could also kind of see it in the realm, in the same vein of, like, Hero Realms or the Legendary series. But I do think that little extra progression from year to year kind of gives it a leg up on the Legendary series, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, that's really cool.
There's also an expansion to that one that has you playing as Luna, which is a fan favorite, so you can get your hands on that as well.
Nice. That means nothing to me.
I know. I need you to check it out.
Does that make your soul sad?
I mean, I just think you're missing out on happiness.
I probably am. I think I would enjoy it if I really got into it, but I just...
Yeah, I mean, at least go watch the movies, Ryan. Come on.
I got too much in my life. I got cereal. I found some grapes that I really like.
I don't understand. Are you hungry now? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No, I had some grapes just before I started the podcast, and I'm thinking about the grapes now. So instead of eating the grapes, I'm thinking about them while we talk. So.
Okay, well, I'm glad we were able to get to the root of that. All right, anyway, games.
Star Wars Imperial Assault, that is a game that Josiah and I have enjoyed. We've had some friends over and we've played. It's a beast of a game. This Joker is $100. It's a big box game, and it includes a ton of miniatures. But they did such a good job with the Star Wars license, and they made it feel like you are battling in this ship, and you feel like you're on the Death Star. You feel like you're at on Endor. Like, it just feels really good. The characters look good. The models look good. And the campaign that it takes you on makes a lot of sense. Star Wars Imperial Assault from Fantasy Flight Games. That's a game that they did really well, and they just continue to put out more and more material, thinking that we have endless amounts of money in our wallet.
Yeah, I think Star Wars has had some really solid licensed games
come
out recently.
They have.
Star Wars Rebellion is a very highly ranked game. It's two-player, but kind of has you feeling that same way of going to all the different locations. And Star Wars, the X-Wing miniatures game, I believe you've played as well, right?
Yeah, I've played Star Wars X-Wing miniature. That's kind of a hot topic right this second that people don't want to talk about because it is... they just introduced a 2.0 version of X-Wing, which makes you either rebuy everything or buy basically this $50 patch for the game to make it updated. Yeah, they really got some people over a barrel on that one. So,
well, you know what? If it's fun and or anywhere close to fun, and it's Star Wars, they know they're going to make their money.
I feel bad. I've got some friends who are $400 or $500 deep in Star Wars X-Wing, and I'm just like, nah. I'm glad I never jumped into that. So I played it, had fun, but no, super glad.
Yeah.
Didn't get into it. Jetpack Joyride. That was a surprise. That was such a good use of the license. Lucky Duck Games just ended a Kickstarter on that a couple months ago. Jetpack Joyride should come out, I think, the beginning of the year, 2019, I believe, somewhere around there. But they did such a great job adapting the app and using the license to make a fun game that was real time. I was really impressed with how Jetpack Joyride plays and the fact that it feels like an endless runner. That was surprising. And so great job with that license.
Yeah, there's, you know, that's something that seems at least a little weird to my brain is a video game, especially an app becoming a board game. But it's awesome that this one was able to come out and be pretty interesting and turn a mechanic that you would think would be very difficult to execute in a board game, and they were able to do it. Because that's a difference between a board game and a movie. Like, a movie, you just got the theme and the story and stuff, and so you can kind of go at it a bunch of different ways. With a video game, like, it has its own mechanics. It has its own, you know, this and that. So because they're both games, you're going to have a lot of weird crossover, but, you know, Jetpack Joyride was able to pull it off.
Yeah, it was good. They did a really good job with it. So, and you kind of pressed me to put this one on the list. This is, do you know the game Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters, Rick?
I know it less than the actual game that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. So Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters is a German game that just really successful, great gameplay. It's kind of a roll and move and cooperative type of game that is really great for families. In fact, I found a copy of Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters at an Ollie's store, which is kind of like not a thrift store, but it's kind of like a Big Lots if you downgraded it. Anyway, found it for like $14. I was like, oh, do I need to own this too? No, my wallet says no. But Ghostbusters Protect the Barrier is put out by Mattel, I believe. But it is a reskin of Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters with the Ghostbusters characters from the new 2016 movie update. It is a fun game. It's a great cooperative game. And actually, Rick, you and I played this. We played with our friend Josh and Josiah, I believe. I tried to tell you, I was like, listen, it's a little tough. The game's kind of hard. And you were like, oh, this is a baby game. I'm going to do fine. And we all died.
Yeah, well, sometimes those things happen. It feels like it doesn't perfectly match Ghostbusters at all. Like, it doesn't make sense to, like, have to get treasures and take them back out of a building as a Ghostbuster. Like, yeah, that doesn't work. But the game is fun. And, you know, it's a reskin that makes sense in that you're fighting ghosts. And I think that is essentially all you really need for a Ghostbusters game. I also compare it to Ghostbusters the board game, which I did a review on. It's been a while now, but it is a much larger, much more expensive game. Yeah. And I honestly had more fun with Ghostbusters Protect the Barrier because it's simple. I mean, Ghostbusters the board game plays to where you're doing the same thing over and over again, move around the board, work together to beat ghosts, and they have different challenges. And I mean, it's not awful, but it just takes so long to set up and explain. And like, it just kind of feels like you're doing the same thing over and over again after a while. I like this better. And maybe it just says something about the type of board gamer I am. I know a lot of people that disagree with me, but I think this is proof that reskinning something can still work. Like, is something that, if done well, can be successful for a licensed game.
This game could stand on its own even without you knowing that the original existed. It doesn't feel like it's tacked on. It doesn't feel like, oh, well, they just, like, overlaid a new map or recolored everything. Like, it just feels like a fun game, you know, regardless of what its history was. You know, I think the components, there are some components that I like better in Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters, and there's some components I like better in Ghostbusters Protect the Barrier. So you take either one. Honestly, at the time when I bought it, Ghostbusters was $19, and it still is $19. At that time, Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters was $35, I think, and it was hard to find. So I was like, why would I pay $15 extra for a game that plays exactly the same?
You know? Right.
So anyway, Cool. Well, Rick, thanks for having this conversation about licensed gaming. Hopefully this was insightful and helpful. And hopefully if you have some opinions on licensed games, we would love to hear them. Be sure to message us in the comments, write us at contact@oneboardfamily.com, or sound off on the Facebook page. Any of the ways that you like to do it. So, Rick, where can people find us?
They can find us on most of the social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. If you check out One Board Family, you'll be able to find us. We've also got, of course, this podcast. We've got our website. We also ask that you always check out our Patreon. We could use supporters to try to get some more of these board games, like these licensed board games that are coming out all over the place. We don't make a ton of money to be able to go out and just buy all these, so if you can help us, we'll be able to tell you whether it's worth your money or not. It's kind of like an investment. You should check it out.
That's right.
And plus, if you do it, you get to join us on our Slack channel, which is continues to be one of my favorite things that we do. So, you know what? It's probably worth it. Just $5 a month, and you'll be able to join that Slack channel.
That's right. And actually, I know you saw the invite on the Slack channel this past week. That was pretty cool. Giving little perks here and there, you know, to just to do different things and to sound off on different projects we're working on. Be sure to become a Patreon donor if that interests you at all. So thanks so much for listening. Be sure to rate this podcast wherever you've downloaded it and tell your friends about it. Hey, here's a mission. Before next week, before next Tuesday, when a new one comes out, tell one person about it. We would appreciate it. Maybe share it on a social media site. It would mean a lot to us. We really do appreciate that stuff. So thanks for listening, and we will see you at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.